Hey, welcome to Perspectives. This is a chance for us to talk a little bit about just some current issues, try to think about them from a Christian perspective, a biblical perspective. And today I'm joined by Jonathan Thiede. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
And we are going to talk a little bit about AI and especially how that could or is going to impact faith and life and how we should really want to think about it. And just as a way to start, it seems to me that this is potentially one of those things that could revolutionize a lot of the way society functions, a lot like the internet did a generation ago at this point. And so that is something to pay attention to and to ask some questions about the intelligent use of and everything like that. So Jonathan, just for those who maybe haven't dabbled in it, played with it at all, tell us what it is, what it does first, just so we have some concept and working definition, and then we can, talk about the implications.
Yeah, so AI is essentially a tool that is being used right now. It's been in science fiction for years, just this idea that it's a machine that essentially learns on the fly. I think what we have now is a lot less scary than that. It's simply a tool that can take in information and do things that are really just a step beyond what tools have done in the past. An example of this would be using Microsoft Excel. You can sort of tell AI, hey, here's a spreadsheet, do this sort of simple task for me. And so I think what we're going to see is there are going to be many, many things that it can do, and it's going to open and hopefully be a time saver for a lot of people. The difficult part of this as leaders in general is we have to sort of forecast, what this is going to be in the future. I think I speak for myself when I say no one wants to be that guy when the internet came out, and you use that example, and be like, oh, this is just a fad. 6 months from now, no one's going to be using the internet. And then years down the road, people have that soundbite and you look ridiculous. But I think about this in a lot of ways. People were saying a lot of similar things about VR a couple years ago, even as it relates to church. I remember people, I was seeing articles and people saying, we're going to do church totally VR. We're not even going to meet anymore. And that was probably 4 or 5 years ago at this point. And VR is still out there. It's not like virtual reality, that is. It's still not, but it's not as prevalent as I guess people thought it would be. So I think that's the big question that we have to be able to forecast is this really that big of a deal, or is this sort of a flash in the pan?
Yeah, I would guess VR doesn't yet have the technology strong enough that it's having enough of a wave. Mm-hmm. At some point, as that gets better, I think it'll probably have a bigger impact. Mm-hmm. So artificial intelligence is really the concept of being able to type into something, here's what I'd like, and then some program, some computer-generated response comes at you. So it can be an image. We're hearing about video potential. We're certainly seeing it in written documents. And so there's several ethical issues. Certainly students who are writing papers, you can just simply prompt AI to take something and say, here, just give me this, and it'll type it out. And then you have a decision to make. Do you try to use it as a research assistant to say, this is something that just helped point me in a direction, and then I'm going to write something? Or do you basically plagiarize it? And I guess that's, certainly an ethical issue for students today, and probably anybody who's going to put something out in the public domain, is how much am I doing that? Now, my take is it would be pretty goofy to take that, because anybody else can type in a similar prompt and say, you took that. And so it, at some level, isn't probably wise, but I'm sure there will be some of that passing work off as your own that isn't your own. So I guess speak to that first, and then let's talk about some of the other implications.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I was just talking, I think, a few weekends ago to someone at a in-between services on a Sunday service, and he was a tech volunteer who was also a teacher, and he was talking about, someone was asking them about, Like, do you guys even do handwriting anymore? Mm-hmm. And he's like, you'd be surprised, because that's really coming back, because handwritten tests are coming back because of the prevalence of AI. It's difficult to trust. Is this from AI, or is this from your own original thoughts? But yeah, to your point, I think there's going to be a lot of ethical dilemmas, especially with students, because it is so tempting. Especially if you're running late, you can say, "Hey, here is all of Shakespeare. Now write me, and here's all the commentary that's ever been done on Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. Write me something at a 10th grade level, you know." And it's to some degree, I think from the further back you stand, it looks very impressive, but the more I think the details, it can be flawed. I know just to be honest, and I've sort of played around with it. ChatGPT is like the premier one. It's free. It's if you have any interest in AI, you can use it. And so when it came out, it was just really big in the young adult space. We were always talking about it. It felt like it came up every week. And so in planning for events last year, I was just curious what it had to say. I was like, give me your top 10 best events for young adults to do in a church setting. And it ranged anywhere from like, oh, that actually sounds like a fun idea, to, man, we're just the cheesiest, you know, because it's drawing from every church, you know, website in the world. And so you get some really cheesy ideas, and you get some ideas you're like, oh, I've never thought about that before. But to be honest, it's a lot more on the cheesy side, because you're just drawing
For some things. I've played with it as well. And my take would be, just from that standpoint, it's really not that different than reading a book. It's just another resource. So like if I sit down to write a message, you know, historically I've had 8 books, and I'll sit and I'll read what 8 books say on a subject, and then say, okay, I'm going to form thoughts out of that. And AI is like having another book, if that's how you look at it. Here's another source of data, another way to look at what you have. So I think if somebody looks at it that way, it's probably a great resource. Obviously, if it becomes a crutch. So my wife and I were playing with it the other day, and she prompted it to write a love letter to her husband, and it was include, you know, and she included some music we had liked, where we've lived, things we enjoy, and it spit out a pretty good love letter. It was like, oh, do I feel pursued? You know, if she had copied that, handwritten it, and written it, there are a few phrases that I would have said, that's not her. But by and large, it probably could have prompted her to write a better love letter in some ways than maybe she would have on her own. So that was an interesting prompt. Now, the other thing that seems so, there's a lot of conversation about Google Gemini in the last couple weeks, because evidently when they kind of re-released this, people would put in prompts and it would steer the answers pretty strongly away from white people. I don't know if you saw this whole thing.
No, I didn't.
So people would type in things like, show me the founding fathers of America or something. And they would get people who were anything but white.
Sure.
And then it led people to keep trying to prompt it. And what they found was that if you said, show me even like a white man, it would say, I'm sorry, we can't, but show me a black person. And they would say, yes, show me an Asian person, yes. And so there was a whole reaction to, okay, this has been clearly programmed not just to reflect the computer side, but has an agenda.
Right.
And then they went, and the person who's been kind of over it they went back and found his tweets, people did, and you know, he'd said all kinds of things that were like clearly agenda driven.
Yeah.
So I think from a Christian standpoint, one of the thoughts is to understand that AI is not necessarily morally neutral just because it's computer generated, that somebody still can give parameters. So what evidently Google Gemini was doing was it would rewrite your prompts so that it would have a parameter that whatever prompt you would put in, it would prompt you. So that led me to sit on it for a little while and start typing in things like asking it moral ethical questions around issues of faith to see what kind of bias that it might have had. And, you know, I wouldn't say it was crazy in that space. Like, I wasn't like, oh my goodness, but it would be clear to me that if that is the only source that somebody uses, or their primary source, that you are getting an agenda. Now, again, I would say that's really no different than Google anyway, that has a filter on its search. That's no different than the book you select to read on an issue, because whoever tells the story tells the story. I mean, this is why, you know, historically, like, curriculum books in local schools matter, because whoever is choosing the book is telling the story in a way that influences how it's perceived. But I think it's important to understand that potential is there. Now, it seems less so in ChatGPT to me, because I did the whole back and forth, type the same prompts into both of them and try to look at it. So how would you encourage somebody, you know, you work with young adults here, primarily at Orchard Hill, among other demographics, but how would you encourage somebody to sharpen their mind enough to be able to discern what is truth and what is agenda-driven? Because that's really the same issue. I mean, the issue here is ultimately discernment and thinking biblically rather than just taking in whatever is said to be true.
Yeah, so I think the first thing that I would counsel someone, especially as it relates to this topic, is to know what you're getting yourself into. And so I think having a big part of having discernment is to have a healthy level of skepticism about really the world that we live in, and really not being all that surprised when you realize that things are agenda driven. As it relates to AI, I think it's crucially important for people to, I think there's the ethics component that we've sort of already touched on. But another thing that's important as it relates to AI is just to be discerning enough to know this is something that is created by a person. You know, this isn't something that was sort of dropped down by God in order to, as you said, be sort of, I guess if it was from God, it wouldn't be morally neutral. But essentially, this is not something that we all have an active sort of stance on. So I think it would be similar to how I would counsel someone about just having a healthy level of skepticism about really anything that you see in news or in media. But I think there's something interesting, and I'm not really sure why, but there's something interesting about the internet that sort of feels like it should be, like we were saying, morally neutral. I mean, even, I think I have a healthy level of skepticism, but even I was surprised when you said that the way AI was built, the way Gemini was built, was had some sort of flaw in it, and so I think just waking up to the fact that we need to view AI in a similar way to where we view really any conversation with anyone. We need to define our terms. We need to be increasingly clear on what we're talking about. You know, when we're talking about faith, are we talking about a kind of faith that is distinct and specific, or are we talking about just general wishfulness and trust? And so I think defining terms is really important, and just, like I said, knowing what you're getting yourself into, and not viewing AI as sort of the end-all be-all, but it's one of many tools.
Yeah, so, certainly it's something that can be useful, and I'm embrace tools rather than shun them kind of a person. But I, your average person who, you know, hasn't spent a lot of time studying theology, didn't go to a Christian college or high school, and just says, wow, you know, I'm going to type into AI, tell me what the Bible teaches on. What would be your advice then to say, okay, how do I know then that I'm getting what the Bible teaches on? And again, I did this on a variety of topics, and ChatGPT was pretty good in saying, here's, some say this, some say this, but it was very both-sidism on any issue. Gemini was a little more slanted, I would say.
Yeah.
And those were the two that I just looked at personally. So how would you encourage somebody to use the tool but not be unduly persuaded by the tool?
Yeah, definitely. I would counsel them to know that as you're getting into this, that there's a lot of theological convictions in the world, and we all approach the Bible with sincere theological convictions. And so when you're going to the internet or AI or really any machine, you're going to be getting a baseline understanding of something. It's going to be probably as general as it can be. And so, like you were saying, it's going to give you a variety of different opinions. I think how you can use that is very valuable, though, especially if you're at the beginning of your study on a particular topic. If you wanted to know, hey, what does the Bible say about marriage? I think that would be a good example that it would say, well, some people believe this, some people believe that, some people believe that, you know, when you go to a wedding that you're all witnesses and you're all sort of marrying each other. Other people believe that it's just sort of a personal commitment between you guys. It doesn't really matter who is present. It doesn't even really matter that God is present. So you're going to get a variety of those opinions. But I think it is going to give you a level of truth. It just might not be the one that sort of matches your own theological conviction.
So I actually have a stronger answer to that question. And like I think you're right to say, oh, yeah, it's in the ballpark. You can't take everything. But I would say one of the things you're working on here is kind of our scope and sequence of our adult ministry, seasonal studies, and the theology sequence for our congregation.
Right.
And I would say that that's a great option to, because the way that you can spot something that's off is by knowing what you already believe. And the way that you don't know when something's off is when you don't have a filter for it. So, for example, if let's just say that I wanted to know how to wire an electrical outlet, and so I typed into AI, how can I wire an electrical outlet, and it would give me a nice quick rundown. But if I don't have any other point of reference, if that has a bias that says, now here's a way to do it that is not the accepted way of thinking about it, I'll not be able to spot it. But if I've already become familiar with how to wire an electrical outlet, I'd be able to say, oh, that's probably not a good example because that feels like that's pretty a standard thing. But that's actually why I use that example, because I think there should be an answer to that. Now, obviously, when we start talking about moral issues, issues of interpretation, you will have some difference. But I would say, I would encourage somebody to say, because of the proliferation of content and answers that are out there, it actually makes study ahead of time even more important, not less important. Because I think what will happen is people will think, well, I don't need to study as much because I can just, boom, and I can get some answers without having to read books, think, go through the process of study. And I think what we actually need is the opposite, is people to say, actually, because of the proliferation, I need to dive in more to my faith so that I understand what is right and true, what I believe, so that when I'm given, whether it's both-sidism or something that's blatantly has an agenda, I can say, okay, I sense or know that's not quite right in that. So that would be my answer, and obviously you can do it other ways than our scope and sequence of our theology classes here at Orchard Hill. You can just say, hey, I'm going to read through, my Bible recap. I can read a theology book myself. But tell us just a little bit about just scope and sequence of the theology that you and the team are working on, just so people understand what I'm talking about in that. And then I have another question on AI before we're done.
Yeah, so we have these courses at the church that we call seasonal studies, and they're four-week courses at a time. The church has done seasonal studies in the past. That's not really anything new, but we sat down about a year ago, and we really wanted to have something that people could go through and feel like, man, I've run the gamut of Christian thought. It might not be as deep into every single topic that you'd like to go, but it's pretty deep. It's more deep than your typical small group has the luxury of time to go into. And so we have classes that are pretty general, like we call it Top Theology Part 1 and 2. And so that's really if I were to recommend really one class, it would be either Top Theology Part part one, or this class that we call key doctrines. And so that gives you a baseline of really what the word doctrine even means. What does it mean that to have sort of a belief about belief? What is it? What is our doctrine of the word? What is the Bible? I think that just sort of sets the course for a lot of what we believe as Christians. And then we have other classes like objections, which is more apologetically driven. And there's definitely a sequence to these things that we want people to go through, but we try to set them up to where someone can approach them on an a la carte basis as well. Someone can, hey, I'm really interested in apologetics. I'm going to register for this class and take it. So they're 4 weeks at a time, but they're designed to where from January to December, we'd like to, or I guess rather from the fall to the end of the spring, we'd like to offer one either in person or online at least once throughout the year, so that if you are earnest and you have some time on your hands, they're always an evening, in the evening at 7 o'clock. So if you have some time on your hands and you say, I want to really devote this year to learning about my Christian walk, learning about what the Bible has to say about all these issues, you have that opportunity to do that within a year's time.
Which again would be a good way to just kind of do this. And here's just a verse on this. This is 2 Timothy 2:15. Do your best to present yourself to God as one approved, a worker who does not need to be ashamed and who correctly handles the word of truth. And so there is an implication in Scripture just to say study so that you can handle truth in a way that you don't always have to say somebody else should be able to tell me if this is true or not true in that way. And our hope ultimately with the class structure, the seasonal studies, is that there would be different levels. So, you know, there's kind of like a 101, a 201, a 301, because as Jonathan said, you know, there's like, here's something in 4 weeks, you're not going to exhaust a topic. And so eventually we'd love to have some things that give you a chance to even take another step on that. So one other, and this probably goes back to the ethical question. Mm-hmm. One of the things I saw was that some students, some boys, I think, were using AI to generate nude images of their female classmates, mm-hmm. And then disseminating it as pornography that wasn't actually the girl. So how would you respond to that? And what wisdom would you have as, you know, parents thinking about, oh, you know what, AI, this is great. They can get help with their homework and it can help them do some things. So what cautions, I guess, would you have around it and specifically to, you know, that kind of a situation?
Yeah, so the unfortunate side effect, one of the unfortunate side effects of AI is that I think this is going to make me sound old and young at the same time. But I mean, 10 years ago, you have the internet and you see a picture on the internet and you assume that it's real. You assume that it was taken, or at the very least, it had some Photoshop tendencies. Now we don't really have that luxury because you can tell AI like, hey, here's a lot of photos of this person and make them do really whatever you want. And so I think it really just calls upon parents to be even more strict about what filters are on someone's phone, to be able to know, hey, these things are out there, and not everything that you see is true. And I think it's important just to counsel kids and just to help them understand, and largely they're going to understand it even better than we do, but that these things are out there and these things are dangerous, and these things are no different from pornography. And in a lot of ways, it's even worse because you're taking someone who has not consented to their image being done in that way. And so obviously there are unfortunate side effects. I'm not really sure how Google or someone's going to regulate that. Hopefully their technology is smart enough to sense, okay, this is a nude image, and so mm-hmm. We're going to go through the parental controls and settings.
Right. Well, and allegedly the other thing that's possible, I don't think it's quite here yet, but is to take somebody who has a recording of their voice somewhere and then type in, I want them to say this, and you can make them sound like they're saying in their own voice things that they're not. So again, there are some cautions here, but again, I think if you lean too hard into the cautions, you'll miss something that probably is going to impact our world as much as the internet did in some ways, maybe not as much, but certainly it will have huge ramifications for the way that, people live in the days ahead. And so that is our conversation today on artificial intelligence. And thanks for spending part of your day here today with us in this conversation.